This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, this is Jeanette Lefebvre, your guest host tonight on the People Speak Radio. At the People Speak, we believe the voices and actions of ordinary people make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak at bbsradio.com, live every Tuesday night from 8:55 to 9:50 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also log into our website at thepeoplespeakradio.com to listen to us live, join us through our live chat on Pal Talk, or listen to the archives of previous shows. We broadcast 1 hour live to the USA, United Kingdom, Canada, and Australia. If you have a question for our guest, you may call in toll-free in the USA and Canada at 1-888-260-3070 or on Skype BBS Radio. Identify your location and give a first name. Make sure to turn down your speakers or there will be feedback. We are now toll-free. You can also listen and call via your smartphone by calling 1-712-432-0075, and when prompted, enter access code 318-116, so you never have to miss the best guest on internet radio. In the intro, I skipped mentioning that I'm filling in for Bessemer Farhat because tonight she is our guest. She recently went to Washington for a convention and to discuss the situation in Palestine with members of Congress, and she's here with us tonight to report on those meetings. Good evening, Bessemer. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeanette. How are you? Thank you for doing this. This is wonderful.
Oh, my pleasure. I've supported the cause of the Palestinian people for many decades now, and I'm pleased to have the opportunity to help. But more, fill us in. First of all, why did you go to Washington, and what were you doing while you were there?
Well, actually, this was a vacation for me. I happen to come from one of the largest Christian Palestinian families on planet Earth. As a matter of fact, my family happens to be recorded in the Guinness Book of World Records. We had probably 10 years ago, 10, 12, 15 years ago, we had about 45,000 people in our family. We estimate at least... We're pretty sexually active beings, so I estimate a lot more Palestinians have arrived in the community since then. And every year, for the last, 53rd convention, we have met in various states. It's an international community. But we have a lot, but most of the convention happen in the United States. We have conventions in Chicago, Washington, D.C., Detroit, San Francisco, San Jose, Florida, all over, any of the host communities that is large enough to accommodate a convention the size of ours. And I say the size of ours because when we had it in Detroit, we had over 5,000 people going into the hotel that day, that weekend. So Washington, D.C. is also an incredibly large community of Palestinian. It's from Ramallah. The convention is called the Ramallah Federation of Palestine. And we meet on a yearly basis. And I took my family, I took my grandsons for the first time to a full convention. They were a little bit little the last time they were here. We had it in Detroit. And I can't even begin to describe the unbelievable camaraderie that happens at this convention. But being as it was in Washington, D.C., it was also a very important convention. So we had a lot of action with local community, local politicians, and we had a lot of opportunity to intermingle and to go on the Hill. So it was just an all-round wonderful, wonderful experience. One of the best experiences that any Palestinian can ever have.
Now, just before the show tonight, Basima, you passed some information to me regarding House Resolution 268. Would you mind filling in the audience on what that is and what it means to the Palestinians?
Well, let me see if I can read the summary, because it's not very long, and it's really quite this is a Congressional Research Service summary, and it's not necessary. It's a well-respected nonpartisan arm of the Library of Congress. So they use these summaries in congressional committee to for various reasons. So it is a very reputable summary. Let me see. 513. This was introduced 513 of 211. And this states that reaffirms support for the negotiated solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, resulting in two states, a democratic Jewish state of Israel and a democratic Palestinian state living in peace and mutual recognition. States that any Palestinian unity government must forswear terrorism, must accept Israel's right to exist, and reaffirm previous agreements made with Israel. It opposes any attempt to establish or seek recognition of a Palestinian state outside of an agreement negotiated between Israel and Palestine. It urges Palestinian leaders to cease efforts in circumventing the negotiation process, including a unilateral declaration of statehood or by seeking recognition of the Palestinian state from other nations in the United Nations. This goes on, but this is the gist of it. Now, what happens here is the U.S.-Palestinian relations will have implications for the U.S. assistance programs for Palestinians and Palestinian Authority. What they're talking about here is sanctions, and this is the full breadth of the issue, is that if the vote on the Hill that weekend was happening, and I was fortunate enough, as a group, we were invited by Congressman Jim Moran for a luncheon. You can't really get into the Hill on for a luncheon or anything else unless you're invited by a congressman or a senator or someone in the hierarchy. So what ends up happening is we went to lunch, and my cousin asked me if I would like to lobby with her, because the vote was going to go in for Resolution 268 the next day. And she was hoping to be able to encourage some of the congresspeople that we knew from our area, from the metropolitan Detroit area, who knew my cousin, and help them to either abstain or to vote no against the sanctions of Palestine. And that's exactly what we did, and it was an amazing thing. We lobbied Congressman John Dingell from the 15th District, Congressman Hanson Clark from the 13th District, which is the Detroit District, and Congressman Gary Peters from the 9th District. And that was where the interesting stuff came about.
Okay, could you tell us in what way interesting?
Well, first of all, my cousin, Terry Awal, who happens to be the reigning current Federation president for the convention and was brought into the fold this year, happened to go to school with Gary Peters and is extremely politically involved in this area and well-known. So it was just on her name alone that Congressman Peters accepted us into his office for a short meeting. And we were pretty surprised because he not only had himself, he had one of his staffers with him. Well, as Terry was discussing the issue of hoping that Gary Peters would abstain from voting for sanctions against Palestine if they challenged the Israelis and went ahead in September and applied for statehood, first of all, it was kind of interesting to realize how little some of our congresspeople know about what the heck they're voting about, and that's what I found to be the most heinous crime of anything that we witnessed there. Gary Peters was going into a vote and he had no idea what he was voting for. Not that it mattered, but he had no idea what he was voting for. And he didn't mind saying that he didn't. So what he did, because we were, he saw that we were very, I was there, my son-in-law, Dr. Adela Rabo, and my sister-in-law from Kentucky, Joanne Martha, and her sister, Rima Zenaid from Chicago. All of us are longtime members of the Federation, and so we all were with my cousin, Terry, to these meetings. Well, what ended up happening is suddenly the staffer went out to get a copy of the resolution for Gary Peters, came back in with a new staffer, Mr. Eric Feldman. Well, we thought that was kind of interesting because it's hard enough to get into Congress, let alone have three people being so attentive for such a long time just before a very important vote. Well, I'm telling you, Jeanette, you would have laughed. Had you been there, you would have loved to have been a fly on the wall just listening to this. I've never felt that we threatened someone so much as we did Eric Feldman. Now, apparently, Gary, who didn't know what the vote was about, but Eric did, and he challenged us on it, and he started, you know, it was the same old myth that the majority of Americans fall under the assumption of. It's this mythology that has been created by Zionist propaganda in this country, by Israeli intervention in our country. What ends up happening is, and people believe this myth because they don't know any better. Gary Peters didn't even know what was in the resolution, but he went and he voted on it. And when we asked him to at least, if nothing else, to abstain from the vote, he said he would really seriously look into the matter. Obviously, he didn't. We found out the next day that he voted for. Of course, we could find that information out very quickly. Congressman John Dingell, who is a great friend of the Palestinian community here in Detroit and one of the longest-serving congressmen in Washington, voted against. And Congressman Hanson Clark, who is a pretty new guy, and I guess the way it works, Jeanette, this was really funny. I found out some really interesting things. Congressman Hanson Clark was in one of the buildings. I think it was like C building. And I guess C building, or what, I think it was C building. We had walked down so many corridors and aisles, it was ridiculous. But anyway, C building is where the newbies come to stay. The congresspeople that are new to the Hill and don't have a lot of influence. And so we knew that. And again, Terry knew Hanson Clark, and she asked him to at least abstain, if nothing more. She realized the predicament that he was in as a new congressperson. And she knew that, and she told him, she said, I know the amount of pressure you will experience if you vote no, but at least abstain. So we thought that was very interesting, and we were just watching all of this unfold. It was just amazing, Jeanette.
Well, they do say that there's two things you don't want to watch in progress, and that is the making of law and the making of sausage, that they're pretty similar.
They sure are.
Was that your experience?
Absolutely. First of all, there's a lot of protocol that happens when you go to Washington and on the Hill, as they say. As I said, we had to be invited guests of one of the of a hosting congressperson, and we were. Jim Moran was there, and it was, again, very interesting. What I found interesting was just the way it worked, the way lobbyists worked, the way they walked from mile upon mile upon mile, going in and out of one corridor after another, trying to find a congressperson. Then we had to find them in time. You know, they tell you go and meet with your congresspeople, but to be quite honest with you, they make it pretty damn difficult in Washington, D.C. to do that. They were either in house, or they were getting ready to vote, or, and then if they came back, they came back for a couple of minutes and you had to have an appointment, and or else you could sit and wait for hours and hours until they decided to show up. It was, and like I said, had it been just me or my son-in-law or my sister-in-law just walking through the halls, they probably wouldn't have allowed it, first of all. Then if they did allow it, you would have to find the right moment to catch the right guy in order to be able to talk to him. And unless you had somebody like Terry going with you, I got news for you folks. It's not as easy as you think to get into Congress.
Well, even contacting a congressman or senator has proven rather difficult. We've, on other issues, we've made that effort, and you tend to get a form letter response that really has no relationship to the question you asked.
Exactly.
Did you encounter that where they tried to divert or distract or and discuss things that weren't relevant to your purpose?
Well, one of the things that I found was that I couldn't get a hold of a name to save my soul. I called Congressman Gary Peters' office here in Troy, Michigan, where his home base is. And what I needed to know was the staffer, the first staffer's name. I had forgotten the first staffer's name, and I'd been trying to get it for 3 days now, and nobody seemed to know what I was talking about. And if they did, they certainly weren't giving me the information. And I'm thinking to myself, how many staffers could you possibly have in your Washington office? The office is like less than 900 square feet, and you've got 5 people in there. So really, I think you knew who I was talking about. So that was one of the things that I found. And I found that to be very interesting, that is that I couldn't get a name. But the staffer, and the reason I wanted to get that staffer is because there was something in him. And I am, this is purely something that I can say that I felt. There was nothing in what he said, nothing in what he did that indicated this, but I felt that he understood, because every time certain questions were raised with the other staffer, Eric Feldman, and we challenged him on it, such as the equal rights for citizens in Israel, Palestinian or Arab citizens in Israel, which is a myth, one of the other myths that people believe, that Palestinians and people that are not Jewish, of Jewish descent, have equal rights in Israel. That's not true. And I told him it's not true, and I told him how to find out it wasn't true, and I told him to call and find out from the people in Israel about the lawsuit, the class action lawsuit that was going, that was currently in the Israeli court system, and that was demanding equal rights for the Arab descendant citizens of the in Israel. And he looked at me, I mean, I swear, I thought his head was going to pop. He turned beet red. He was furious, you could tell. But the other guy was just kind of bowing his head. And it was like I knew he understood what we were saying. And he knew. You know, you can only hide the truths in so many ways, Jeanette. It was unbelievable. It was a lot of fun, though, putting a White House staffer on the spot like that. And you know, the interesting thing was Gary Peters was just sitting there doing nothing, saying nothing, being nothing. So he brought his hired guns in. I mean, I thought that was hysterical. I really did. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Well, Peters isn't in my part of the state, so I don't have the chance to vote for or against him. Now, when the vote occurred, do you know how the numbers fell out? How many voted for? How many voted against? How many abstained?
I think there were – let me see if I have the information.
After the show, I'm going to look up my representative and how he voted, though I'm betting I can guess.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell, and you know, just for everybody's information, the person that the representative, the congressperson that brought this to light in Congress was Eric Cantor. Thank you very much, Mr. Cantor, for yet another ridiculous sanction against the victims and not the aggressors. I'm trying to see here if I know that there is I have this page here, but I don't know if the exact number is involved. I think it was 407 yay, 6 nay, 13 present, 5 not voted. And so that's what it stands. So let me see. The Democrats voted 172. Republicans voted 235. And so I have a great site. I'll pass on to you afterwards. But one of the things that I think that Americans have to realize is that the resolution, as it's written, is advocating Israeli principles and making them American positions. That's like the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life.
Now, during the course of your discussions with the various people there, did any of them indicate whether they understood why Israel is so desperate to stop the Palestinians from going before the UN? We hear all the time, the Palestinians need to find peaceful choices. They need to stop firing rockets. They need to exercise legal options. Going before the UN is a legal option. Did they indicate why they believe Israel is so desperate to prevent you from exercising a legal and peaceful option?
No. And I don't think it has anything to do with exercising any kind of a legal option. What ends up happening in the end, and this is the one thing that I found, is how little our representatives know about anything that they're talking about on there. Now, I know John Dingell does, and I know that because I've spoken to John Dingell on numerous occasions. I was with his wife, Debbie Dingell, this morning, and she wasn't surprised in the least by any of the stuff that we were talking about. And what people don't seem to understand is they brought Eric Cantor in because our representative didn't know what he was voting about in foreign policy. How is that acceptable to an American sitting before their representative? Gary Peters happens to be in my son-in-law's congressperson, and he was very shocked by what he saw. And this is the point. These people don't even know what they're voting for, Jeanette. Unfortunately, it is actually a travesty, and I think all Americans should be up in arms at this insanity.
Okay, now, did you have the opportunity to point out to the congressman that going before the UN and seeking recognition is exactly what Israel did in 1948? They did not seek a negotiated solution with the Palestinians. They went before the UN General Assembly and unilaterally sought recognition, which they received. Why is it okay for Israel to operate in that manner? But now that the Palestinians wish to do the same, the U.S. government seems determined to block it.
Well, I don't know. I still don't even know why Israel was recognized originally, Jeanette. The fact of the matter is that the General Assembly had absolutely no right or has the authority to pass sovereignty on any nation. It never went to the Security Council. It went through the General Assembly. So that in itself is a joke. So, but they've accepted something that was not legitimate, and they're not allowing for the same for a legitimate process to go through unhindered. Now, that's the insanity behind it. You know, again, these myths are just everywhere. I don't think anybody even really knows a lot of the truth anymore. You almost have to talk to people that have lived it, people that have experienced it in order to understand the reality of what's going on. And, you know, people sit there and say, well, what is it that the Palestinians want? I'll tell you what they want. It's not that difficult a process to figure out what people want. All you have to do is ask them. We ask for the right of self-determination. We ask for the justice for the refugees. Isn't that what most people ask for? Isn't that what the Israelis ask for? Isn't that what, you know, there's just, I could go on and on and on.
Well, beyond that, Bessema, the UN Charter, what is the purpose of the UN? Doesn't it specify that it's duty to support people's right to self-determination?
Actually, let me see here. You know, the UN Charter itself says that, but again, is that what's happening? Look around you.
No, is that obviously,
it's not happening.
No, it's not happening, and it's not happening in many places. The will of the people on the ground is being circumvented by powers above them. And this is something that has puzzled me for many, many years now, is, you know, yes, some of our government votes out of ignorance. But given that this has been an ongoing situation for decades, it has consumed a great deal of American diplomatic time and energy, a great deal of American funds. Why would they not make more effort to fill themselves in on the background to understand what's going on before they vote? Do you have any?
Well, I don't have any answers. I have more questions. Things like, the power, let's take for instance, the one, veto that President Obama used was recently done to hinder, any kind of repercussions against an illegal settlement that the United States deemed illegal, so that the Israelis wouldn't have any, repercussions. I don't know what the answers are. I wish I did. I know what I can tell you what the answers are. I know I can say to you, why aren't the Palestinians allowed to look? Well, for instance, look what's happening in Israel today. For the last few weeks, there have been incredible demonstrations. They're getting to the point of almost 100,000 people, they estimate, are demonstrating in the streets of Tel Aviv. And they're doing it, and they're sleeping out in the streets, and there's nobody pointing a gun to their head, and nobody is harassing them, and no one is dragging them off by their hair and arresting them. And I think to myself, boy, that must be nice. I wonder what they do if somebody was shooting at them, or if they were behind a wall like the Palestinians, or when they demonstrate that even the Israelis that demonstrate with them are shot at and arrested. You know, I don't know what the answers are. Jeanette, you have as much insight on this. What are your thoughts on how, as an American, we can bring this to a solution?
Well, I've always believed that the only way there's going to be a solution is if the world sanctions Israel as readily as they sanction, Iraq or Syria or Libya. The one-sidedness of the American support makes them a very poor mediator. As you said, this resolution in Congress is clearly the Israeli position. How can the USA be a neutral arbiter on this issue? They should step back and let others who are in fact neutral become more involved. I don't understand why it doesn't happen. We hear they have lots of money. They buy off our congressmen. I've heard others. I've spoke to Joe Metter from the USS Liberty, as you well know, and he considers the position of our Congress regarding Israel to be traitorous, that there are people in this country, in our government, who are putting the interest of a foreign nation ahead of our own. And that should concern all Americans, but most Americans seem totally oblivious to it. I don't really know why. I have speculations that I won't discuss here, but it's incredibly puzzling, especially since our position allows this conflict to continue again for decades, consuming time, energy, money, etc., not to mention our reputation in the world.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, people ask, so what does the U.S. What does the world believe that the U.S. position should be? Well, I think for too long and too often, the United States has acted in the U.N. as a shield for Israel. And they shield him from any accountability for any of the policies towards Palestinians. Most recently, the Obama administration used its only veto in the UN to prevent the Security Council from condemning Israelis from illegal settlements in the occupied territories. Now, when our president, I mean, look at our country. Look at what's going on in our country today. We have everything from blight to financial collapse coming down around us. And so what is our president doing? Vetoing about illegal settlements in another country? Why? To what end and to what purpose does that serve? Now, you know, the U.S. campaign is an organization that supports a two-state solution. And it's focused on the U.S. policy towards Israel and Palestine, and it does not take positions on specific arrangements for resolving the conflict. However, it does base everything that it talks about on international law and human rights. And that's all we're asking. And I think a lot of people sit there and say, well, why do these things happen? And what's your solution to this? I say it's easy. Everybody says, well, this is really difficult. No, it isn't. Apply the law. That's all. Apply the law to Israel as you apply the law to Palestine. I'm not saying absolve Palestine from the legal ramifications of its actions. I think it's perfectly legitimate that we ask all citizens of the world to adhere to the laws of the community and in the world. But I say apply the law to Israel as well. So when our president goes to the UN and uses his only veto, I mean, and look at all the things that he could be using the veto power for. So, I mean, first of all, he didn't have to attack Libya, for one, but that's a whole other topic. But, you know, like I said, going back to my concerns after going on this little lobbying trip, which I thought to be the greatest fun, is that I'm even more disgusted than I ever was about what's happening there. I found a bunch of pretentious people walking around in suits. And I swear to you, Jeanette, I don't think they know a damn thing about what's happening outside of who's backing them, who they're lobbying for, and who's paying their bills. That's all they care about. These are no longer representatives of the United States of America. They are not people that represent us. And if they do represent us, they're fighting a losing battle. Congressman Dingell's, I think, is one of the most honorable men on the Hill. But where has it gotten him? Where has it gotten any of us? I'm disgusted. I'm disappointed. I've never been so ashamed. And to be quite honest with you, after I left, I said, oh, heck, anybody can do this job. All you have to have is a few staffers and you're good to go.
Now, one of the things that's been very obvious, and I know you have family in the diaspora in other countries throughout the Middle East as well as in the USA, the perception, the USA makes a big deal about being a nation that observes the rule of law, that we promote democracy and self-determination. This was our justification for Iraq. This was our justification for bombing in Libya, is that obviously the people of Libya are not happy with their government. They have the right to overthrow a government that they don't believe in. Now, because you are familiar with people, ordinary people, average people, not the governments, throughout the Middle East, how do you think the fact that we say we are for the rule of law, well, unless it's Israel, we don't expect Israel to abide by any law. We support democracy throughout the Middle East, well, except in the case of the Palestinians. What is this doing to the perception on the ground of the USA throughout the Middle East?
Well, let me tell you, I do, and you're right. I do talk to a lot of people that are in the territories in the Middle East, and it is a highly volatile and mixed topic. There are people that absolutely think that this is the greatest thing, because what they believe has happened is we've destabilized the Middle East enough to change regimes. Now, when I say change regimes, I'm not saying democratize. That is the tricky slope that everybody wants to believe is something that wants to happen in the Middle East. Of course, there are people that would like to see it democratized. I, for one, am one of them. I would love to see a full democracy, but then I'd really like to see a full democracy here in the United States, too. And I don't think that's happening anymore. So, but what happens is we realize as Arabs on the ground that many of our leaders are corrupt. Many of our leaders are bought and sold by the highest bidder, including the United States. And we find that repulsive. Do we want a democracy? No. Do we want fairness in transitional governments? Yes. Do we want to alter? We don't want to go in. Our intention was never, as people of the Middle East, was never to go in and disrupt our entire lives. But we're not stupid people. We know that sometimes there has to come civil disrest in the communities. And that's exactly what happened. And that's exactly what America did. Many years ago, Rumsfeld, I can't even remember his first name now. Boy, talk about a distant memory. When he was talking, I think you've heard me say this, Jeanette, before. He was asked in various times prior to the attack on Iraq if we had intention of destabilizing the Middle East. And he said, we have absolutely no intention of destabilizing in the Middle East. 3 days after the attack on Iraq, he came out and he said, we must asked the same question. He said, we must destabilize the Middle East. When he said that, he not only said that, he went and literally called off every name of the Middle Eastern nations, the last being the Saudi Arabian government as regime change. So that was this is not by accident that any of this happened. All of the Arab world knows this. Do we find it disappointing? Yes, we right now we're disappointed, I think, more in ourselves than we are in allowing other people to call to pull our chain, so to speak. We need transitional government in these countries. And do they think America did good? Yeah, as long as America knows when to step back. But they realize now that America doesn't know when to step back. This has got nothing to do with America wanting democracy for the Middle East. America wants a developing nation that has a lot of damn money. And that's what these are. These are developing nations that have a lot of damn money. And there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of capitalization to occur there. And that's what we're doing in the Middle East. Now, does that benefit the people of there? It may. Is it something that they have chosen? Some have. Is it the right way to do it? I don't believe it is. I think it is absolutely the wrong way. And to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't want 8 billion angry Arabs looking in my direction.
Now, in reference, going back to the resolution, has it been voted on in the Senate yet?
Yes. Actually, it went before the Senate. It passed in the Senate before it passed in the House.
Okay. Now, in your opinion, as a Palestinian, do you think this effort by the USA to discourage them from going to the UN in September, as is the plan, do you think it'll be effective? Do you think the Palestinian leadership will drop their pursuit in the UN? Do you think there's anything that the U.S. or Israel could do to prevent that at this point?
No. If they do, I think they're going to have a lot of angry Palestinians on their hand. I don't think there's anything you can do to stop the Palestinian Authority from going before the United Nations and requesting sovereignty for our nation. However, Do I think it's going to be a nightmare? Yes. I believe Israel is going to make it a living hell. That's my firm belief. And the reason that it's going to do it is because we're not playing according to their rules. We're okay as long as we're playing according to Israel's rules.
Okay, Basima, I'm getting questions in. I have from Mike from California on line 3. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. Hello, Basima and Jeanette. What a wonderful show. And I'm so proud that Basima journeyed to D.C. to do this. It's really great to hear her about her work. I mean, this is work. It was a battle, it sounds like. She fought on Capitol Hill. And my question is, for both of you actually, is that considering that this seems to be a very historic moment we're facing in September with Palestine making their case in front of the United Nations, I was distracted there for a moment, but I guess you did mention that the United States has threatened or pressured the United Nations that should they sanction Palestine, that they will withdraw financial funds. You know, the United Nations has a great deal of its budget support from the United States. There seems to be something highly unethical about that, a nation using its money to try and persuade what should be a world group consensus on a certain topic or issue like this.
It most certainly is, Mike. And well, go ahead, Jeanette. Let me, you can, because he was asking both of us, and thank you for that. And again, I thank Jeanette for doing the show for me.
Well, I'm happy to do it. Mike, one of the things that concerns me is, first of all, with the U.S. using its financial clout to pressure sovereign nations to vote in a way that goes against their conscience, goes against their sense of justice and right, would be a mechanism. It would eventually do more harm to the USA, because sovereign nations don't like being told what to do. They don't like having big clubs by the wealthy, powerful held over their head. As it stands, what I'm reading is that right now the Palestinians have the votes in the UN to pass this resolution in the General Assembly that Israel is increasingly desperate, going world capital to world capital, trying to block this. Now, we're also told, well, on the flip side, they make this tremendous effort to stop this from happening, but then they also qualify it, well, it won't make any difference anyway. Well, do you believe that's a little deceptive? If it wouldn't make any difference anyway, why the tremendous effort to prevent them from even asking? If the General Assembly carries no influence, has no power, again, why the tremendous effort on the part of the USA and Israel to block a vote from even happening?
Yeah. And as for part of the problem is, what will happen if Israel is a state? What changes? In and of itself, the admission of the state of Palestine as a member of the United Nations will not change realities on the ground, Mike. Israel will still be an occupying power under international law, and it'll probably continue to violate its obligations under the Fourth Geneva Convention. I mean, that is not going to change. Israel will continue its expansion of its illegal settlements in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. It will still impose collective punishment on the Gaza Strip through an illegal siege. It has been declared an illegal siege. So the initiative in and of itself doesn't really achieve justice for the Palestinian, and it certainly doesn't achieve justice for the Palestinian refugees. Because they will not be able to ensure that they can exercise their right of return. So what changes? That's what the world has to see. Nothing changes for Israel. Nothing changes for Palestine. Yet they defy the very action. And that's so nonsensical. there is absolutely no reason for them not, because it doesn't change anything. They still have that power over us. What we want is a position in the community where we can perhaps establish criteria for international law, if nothing more.
Now, this is the other thing. As an American, I find it very disturbing that our government is actively pursuing what they call war criminals in places like Serbia. And through various African nations, they plan on, if they possible, bringing Gaddafi to trial for war crimes. We put Saddam Hussein on trial for war crimes. Yet we give a free pass to Israel for the same kind of crimes. Now, other than the hypocrisy, I find it disturbing as an American because this is just morally wrong. But one of the things that also bothers me and has frequently, the USA is Israel's number one supporter. And because the USA exercises its veto power quite frequently on behalf of Israel, nothing has been done. And I hear people from various nations around the world condemning the USA for its blind support. Here's my question to the world. What are you doing? What has your nation done to prevent Israel from violating international law? What are your nations doing to enforce international law regarding Israel? Do you absolutely require the United States? There's 190 nations in the UN, yet two of them exercise absolute control, and it's very easy to damn the USA. I admit our government's culpability in this is horrific. But what I find equally inexplicable is other nations that recognize the crimes of Israel, that they recognize the hypocrisy of the USA, make no effort to stop it themselves. They talk a lot. They announce a lot. But when it comes to doing, they do nothing. What would your thoughts be on that, Basima?
Oh, gosh, I'd love to get into it. I don't think we have enough time to. All I can say right now, first of all, I wholeheartedly agree with your statements. But again, my concern is that nothing changes based on Palestine becoming or being declared a sovereign nation. Nothing changes for Israel. Nothing changes for Palestine. The peace negotiations still have to continue. All of the entities and the nuances of this collaborative effort to deny Palestine. And that's really what it is. And our government, unfortunately, is doing things, and I don't think they really know the full extent of why they're doing it. So that disappoints me. I don't know where to go from there. All I know is that I went to Washington, D.C. I stepped into a world that I knew a little bit. I mean, I'm certainly not new to politics and local politics. But this was different. These were the people that really made the difference. And guess what, folks? They don't make a difference. They are paid to do what they are told. And they're not taking their money from you. I got news for you. So that is my statement on what happened in the Hill. But again, some really wonderful things happened, Jeanette, while I was there. I've always said my Palestinian and my half Palestinian, half Iraqi grandsons are pretty well screwed when it comes to their reputation in the world. Yet they were able to embrace the Palestinian side of their family and it was just unbelievable. That was the most important thing that happened there. I came home with fully indoctrinated Palestinian American Iraqi kids, and I am very proud of that. Ralph Nader was there. It was a lot of fun seeing him. We have interviewed Mr. Nader on the show, and it was really fun when he remembered and recognized my name. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know who else was there, Jeanette? Helen Thomas was there. She was at the event. She was one of the honored guests at the event. Ralph Nader was our keynote speaker that evening. And Helen was there, and God, it was really nice to see her. She really has become very fragile, and it was kind of hard to watch that. I think being at home is not good for her. But she has not stopped. I got news for everybody. This woman is just relentless. She's doing interviews all over the place. So it was a lot of fun to see that. And let me see. What else? God, it was just amazing. We had the most fun. I wish you had been there.
Well, I'm planning a different trip in the very near future, so I couldn't take time out for that. But I want to go back to this, because if the Palestinians in the General Assembly gain a majority of the votes and recognition, do you think this would facilitate other nations taking action against Israel? I already am aware that some Israelis cannot travel to certain countries for fear of arrest. Do you think it would be better for the Palestinians to focus on those nations that would support them actively, not just with a vote or with recognition, but that would they go, we are not going to do business with Israel as long as Israel violates international law?
Well, I don't know if it's going to ever get to that, but I already know that there are a lot of, there are over 100 countries that already recognize the state of Israel, the state of Palestine. The Palestinian Liberation Organization already declared its independence in 1988. So, countries like Central and Southern American countries, Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Venezuela, so many of them, most of which were under U.S.-backed non-democratic governments in 1988, have recognized the state of Palestine. And they are, in a lot of cases, speaking out and advocating for this to happen. We have a lot of friends in the world. As a matter of fact, we have, as Palestinians, and this is something for our listeners to hear, we have more friends than we have enemies. It's not us that are making enemies in the world. Israel is making enemies in the world. The United States is making enemies in the world. The Arabs are not making. As a matter of fact, we're sitting back watching as people are starting to understand what is happening with these two countries and this, what I believe to be an unholy alliance. It is not in the benefit of the people of the United States of America to continue to advocate for Israel. And it is not in the Israeli best interest. And I think the Israelis are coming to that understanding. One of the reasons that they're demonstrating is because they can't afford to keep up this occupation. It's crushing the economy of Israel. And, you know, when one couple says that they make $6,000 a month, they have spent their lives fighting for Israel, and they can't survive, there's a problem in Israel. And that's based on the occupation.
But that an occupation and a militaristic state is very expensive, as we in the U.S. know. Half of our budget, a good portion of our deficit, is our military budget.
Yes.
The largest portion. And as we know that Russia, you know, even though Reagan is lauded through the USA as having brought down the USSR, in fact, it was overextension of their military that brought them down, damage to their economy as a result of the need to keep a massive military and their military spending. Is it possible that Israel will experience the same, that they're going to collapse by the weight of their own misguided spending policies? And
well, first of all, I don't know if they are, but I think that the Israelis believe that that's what's going to happen. The Israelis are demonstrating currently as we speak and saying we as a nation cannot survive this occupation. That is what they are telling their government. So who am I? Remember, the Israelis are always right. So now we get to listen to them say that the occupation is crushing the economy of Israel.
Okay, and the other thing being, as we were talking, and it occurred to me during the course of the comments I made, is that this is very possible the reason Israel and the USA are so desperate to circumvent the Palestinian efforts in the UN, because nations that have supported the Palestinians verbally may be encouraged to do more, actively boycott or impose their own individual sanctions on Israel. Would this be within the realm of not every nation? A good many are going to follow the party line, but it wouldn't take very many standing up and doing such a thing to increase the pressure.
Well, I'll tell you, all over the country, all over the world, there are sanctions, divestments, and boycotts against the state of Israel. It is happening every day. It's increasing. There are universities here here in the United States and all over the world that are encouraging these things to happen. People within the state of Israel working and alongside with Palestinians to stop this heinous crime that's being committed against the people of Palestine. So is it going to happen? It already is. Is it going to increase? I believe it will. And I believe as our economies are collapsing around us, now you see what's happening all over the world, people are getting fed up. Look at what's happening in London. Look at this mass killer in Norway. Look at the brutality of the crimes here in the United States. It is just beyond the imagination. So now on top, people are asking the right questions, I think, for the first time. And as they ask the right questions, Jeanette, they will also ask the right questions about Israel. And is it in the benefit of the United States of America to continue serving a self-serving nation that only cares about Israel? It certainly doesn't care about the United States.
Okay, Bessima, I'm getting cues from Seth. Our time is up. I do appreciate you coming and talking to us tonight. Our time is up for the evening, and I thank you for switching hats and being the guest instead of the host.
Well, I appreciate you and thank you.
For our audience, please join Bessima next week when she returns as host to speak with Bruce Siddle of the Warrior Science Group at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the People Speak Radio Show on BBS Radio. And thank you all, and have a pleasant night. Thank you, Bessima.
Thank you, Jeanette.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the stable by the relief office I saw my people, and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.